Ahlan wa sahlan and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 89.7 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Apartheid Israel's genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip continues around the clock, causing massive death and devastation amongst the Palestinians. Since October 7, 2023, Israel murdered more than 34,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children, and injured more than 77,000. There are thousands more missing under the rubble and are presumed killed. Israel has destroyed most of the Gaza Strip with complete support from the United States and with no one to stop it, despite a United Nations Security Council resolution asking Israel to cease fire immediately. Israel has been committing genocide, war crimes, slaughter, ethnic cleansing, and destruction at an unprecedented and accelerated rate than ever before, and it is not over yet. We are watching horror stories told by dozens of eyewitnesses in the Gaza Strip of Israeli occupation soldiers executing Palestinian civilians throughout the Gaza Strip for no reason whatsoever, shooting at women, children, and men, sexually assaulting women, forcing civilians to undress, torturing civilians, tying their hands behind their backs while blindfolding them and keeping them in these positions for days, and with no medical care and very little food or water. Apartheid Israel, the settler colonial project, has been on a mission to make the Gaza Strip uninhabitable for the 2.3 million Palestinians that live there. It has destroyed Palestinian universities, schools, hospitals, clinics, and places of worship, including mosques and churches. It has destroyed cultural centers, grocery stores, supermarkets, bakeries, and restaurants, and has destroyed the infrastructure of the Gaza Strip. It has also been starving Palestinians in Gaza by preventing food and other essentials from reaching the Gaza Strip. It has been doing so while enjoying full impunity for all these war crimes it has been committing against the Palestinians everywhere. And I mean everywhere, not just in the Gaza Strip, and not just after October 7, 2023, but long before. And yes, before Hamas even was founded in the late 80s. It all started over 76 years ago. The ethnic cleansing of Palestine has been ongoing for the past 76 plus years. In the occupied West Bank, apartheid Israel has been attacking Palestinians daily, murdering Palestinians, kidnapping many, destroying Palestinian homes and businesses, destroying Palestinian roads with huge Israeli bulldozers, and protecting the Israeli colonizers who are wreaking havoc against the Palestinians, and at the same time issuing military orders to demolish more Palestinian homes in occupied Jerusalem and the occupied West Bank, and at the same time also erecting more colonies and building more housing units for Jews only on stolen Palestinian lands in occupied Jerusalem and the occupied West Bank. It is an ongoing ethnic cleansing of Palestine that started over 76 years ago. No matter how many times we keep saying that, that's a fact. And as if the ongoing genocide and war crimes against Palestinians are not enough for apartheid Israel, it has been attacking other countries too, and for a long time. Israel has been attacking Syria, Lebanon, and others. And as you know, it has also attacked the Iranian consulate in Syria recently, an Iranian territory considered, which is against international law and is considered an attack on Iran directly. So, and as you know already, Iran retaliated after giving Israel and the world notice of that retaliation in advance, by the way, and targeted military posts. But most of the Iranian rockets and drones were intercepted and almost no damage was caused. Israel said it will retaliate against Iran for its retaliation against Israel. And then Iran warned that if Israel attacks Iran again, it will attack Israel again. Where will this end? Who knows? You have one of the most fascist governments ever to govern apartheid Israel, And if Israel continues its atrocities against so many and continues to enjoy full impunity and with no accountability whatsoever, then why would this settler colonial project stop? During the previous episode of Arab Voices, I talked about and aired some of the remarks delivered at the World Academic Forum for Palestine, Genocide in Gaza. It was held at the University of Houston on April 6th and 7th, 2024, organized by Scholars Against the War on Palestine, a transnational coalition that brings together faculty, researchers, and graduate students to end the century-long colonial war on Palestine. Nearly 50 expert speakers participated in that forum, covering a wide range of topics from various countries. In this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1109, I will air additional remarks delivered at that forum, including the remarks of Dr. Karman Abulsi, Dr. Ghassan Abu Sitta, and Dr. Shandni Desai. Let's listen in, and the voice you will hear first is that of Dr. Abdulrazzaq Takriti, Associate Professor of History and Arab American Educational Foundation Chair in Arab Studies at Rice University, and one of the main organizers of the forum, introducing Dr. Karman Abulsi, followed by Dr. Ghassan Abu Sitta.
So it is a great honor now to introduce Professor Karman Abulsi, who is an inspirational Palestinian scholar, professor at Oxford University, former PLO representative for many, many years, and one of the people that did a great deal of work on the laws of war, these laws that are currently being violated in such a horrendous way during this genocide. Karma also happens to be the person that coined the term scholasticide, a term that is very important for our conference here. So I hope you can join me in welcoming her with a very, very warm applause. Incidentally, Karma taught a generation of Palestinian activists and scholars, including myself. We all owe a great deal to her for our intellectual development and for her guidance, both politically and intellectually. So thank you very much. Karma, please go ahead. Thank you.
First, want to commend scholars on against the war on Palestine. I'd really like to commend the organizing committee because this is an extraordinary and remarkable collection and coordination and hard work. I know how much hard work went into this. Of course, to commend Abdulrazzaq, who is a tornado of energy and force. And I'm very sorry only that I cannot be there in person. It's so important for those of you who could get to Houston. I've just been really ill since COVID and long COVID, and I'm not really in force, but I would be there only because it means so much to everyone to organize together, to discuss together, and to listen in one room. It was very nice to see David McNally. Lovely to see him again. And I just want to also commend the previous panel for their courage. It was a very, very difficult thing that they did, but it was very necessary and important to begin this conference with the testimonies. Also to commend, I know people, the organizers will do all this, Chadney and the others, but Haymarket for streaming this to make the collective, to make wherever we are, participate and be part of this. This conference has former students, former teachers, many, many colleagues. We have brilliant Palestinians that I'm going to be listening to, even though it's much later here in the UK, I'm in the future. And I'm going to make a few remarks only about scholasticide. And I'd like to start, before I make those comments about the laws of war, some comments about some remarks about the historical comparisons. I know you have Ilan there, you have Avi there, you have so many historians, great historians, who have done extraordinary work. But we look as Palestinians, this is a generational conflict, and I was remembering, is there anything like this, you know, comparative to what's happening today, to what's happening when I was in my early, when I was in my 20s in Beirut. You know, there's many massacres underway now in Al-Shifa. When I was in Lebanon, it was Tal al-Za'atar, it was Shatila, Sabra. I had just left Beirut by then. It was the siege. We lost tens and tens and thousands of innocent lives, young men, young women, children, elderly, in this terrible invasion, as is going on today. But there's also, of course, differences. We lost a lot of institutional infrastructure of a different kind. We were at that time still barely a liberation movement, a revolution, and we lost many of the institutional apparatus at that time in 82. Here, and here's where I come to Scholasticide, they have destroyed every single building that holds our records, that holds our schoolrooms, that our classrooms, our universities, our colleagues. It is very difficult to be witnessing it, but the only thing that I always say is, you know, we both intellectually and as human beings, we organize. And we have a great generational, not only history of these terrible crimes that are going on, but we have, and this will be discussed, we have some brilliant scholars here. There's Nimr, there's Sultani, there's Mazen, there's Noura, Erekat. We have many scholars that will talk about the legal aspects. But Scholasticide is very relevant because it's what makes us a people. We're always looking for words. And I was very grateful to Fadi Juda because he finds the words for all of us, that he started the event today. But because education is so important to us as a refugee people, and because not just an occupied people, I wrote about it when I was writing about the occupation of Gaza. Of course, Gaza is largely made up of refugees from the Nakba. I'd also really like to commend Ustaz Ahmed for his testimony this morning about the Nakba. It was very heroic and very touching and moving and so necessary. Still, my family, I can never get them to speak about it. It's a very difficult thing to do and very important that we bring this to the attention of the world. And I'm also very happy that there is going to be a panel about the world being with us, because we have the sister struggles. And we have First Nation people. We have incredible Robin Kelly to talk about African-American struggle. And the Palestinian struggle is an international one. And so it's very important that these terms are brought, and they talk about Palestinian exception. And I'm not sure what I think about that term, but I do think we have an exceptional people. And we have an exceptional people because of the predicament, and above all, because of the struggle. And this exceptional people make organizing and carrying and conveying our message and our struggle forward for justice. And so for the young generation of students, you know, Abdelazak, and I think Omar Shweki is there, and Mesna is there, many former students who are carrying on as faculty, making, protecting the spaces for their students to campaign and raise their voices for justice. Thank you so much for that. We'll hear about education in our universities in Gaza, but also I think Samia Bokme from Bir Zeit will be speaking, which is very important. And you know, we're in the midst of, we can see it, settler colonialism. It's not only an apartheid system, but we're in the stage of settler colonialism and only anti-colonial frameworks and principles will be appropriate for us to move forward. So with that, it's shorter, but I'm very keen to hear Dr. Hassan, who has been doing such remarkable work these last months. So thank you to all of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Nabulsi, for your important words. Dr. Nabulsi has done a lot of work over so many years to document the crimes against the Palestinian people, but even more importantly, to promote frameworks for us to understand what is going on. And on that note, it is a great honor to also introduce Dr. Ghassan Abu Sitte, another person who's been at the forefront of talking about Palestine. Now, Dr. Ghassan is a great humanitarian leader. He's done a lot of humanitarian work in many different parts of the world. He's a brilliant surgeon. And whenever there's a disaster produced by, inflicted by one group of humans against another, we find Dr. Ghassan there. He's been there in almost every attack on Gaza. He's had a very long-standing connection with the people there, with the hospitals there, with the doctors there, and of course, spent, as you know, a good chunk of this genocide in Gaza. More than 45 days, I believe, under siege, in the hospitals, doing heroic work. So he's a true hero, and he's a wonderful scholar, and he's somebody who is a visionary, but also is somebody who does not depoliticize what is going on. Sometimes humanitarian work can be used against the people, not for the people. Because if you turn people to just objects of humanitarianism, you're actually dehumanizing them. And Dr. Ghassan reminds us over and over again that this is a political question and that the humanitarian aspect will be resolved if this genocidal regime ceases to operate in its genocidal ways and if true anti-colonialism prevails in that land. So I'm very honored to introduce him. Thank you, Dr. Ghassan, for being with us, and the floor is yours.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I think one of the things that happens when you leave Gaza, when you leave what Mbembe called the death world, and you come out, is you discover that the genocidal project is really an iceberg, and that Israel is just the tip of the iceberg, and the rest of the iceberg is the axis of genocide. The states that have supported and continue to support Israel, and fund it, politically protect it, ensure that it has the right weapons in the sufficient amounts to carry out the genocide. And it also, this genocidal iceberg has what we call genocidal enablers. And it is a system made up of individuals whose job has been for the last 75 years to ensure impunity, and whose job during this genocide is not just to ensure the impunity of the Israelis, but to ensure that the genocide continues unchallenged to the point where it can continue to function as a genocide that is made up of several killing machines. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But that genocide is never referred to as a genocide. And we saw how difficult it was until the ICJ ruling that we spoke about what we were witnessing, which was a genocide. But in the last two or three days, we've been witnessing that genocidal iceberg starting to come apart. And we've seen how a lot of Israel's accomplices in the genocide, some of the mass media, have started to try to hide the evidence of their complicity in the genocide. And so if we look at the Independent newspaper, which a few days ago ran a front page 2 days consecutively calling for an end to the war, is the same newspaper that ran the front page about the beheaded children that, that you know, that justified this genocidal war. We heard news that the New York Times has fired the journalist who wrote the fictitious piece about the sexual violence report, which was completely unsubstantiated. And so you see, and then you get these lawyers and ex-lords in the UK and ex-lawmakers starting to find the courage to pen letters calling for a ceasefire. So you could see how that genocidal apparatus, that, that iceberg is starting to disintegrate around us. And let us be under no illusion why it's disintegrating. These people haven't suddenly become decent human beings. It is the absolute heroic and historic steadfastness of our people in the face of this genocidal killing machine. The fact that 6 months on, other than the killing of 14, 15,000 children and a total of 35,000 civilians, the Israeli army has nothing to show, and the destruction of Gaza has nothing to show as an achievement. It is the fact that, as we should remind ourselves, that one of the things that has happened to us after 1948 is that, and this is something that one touched when I was in Gaza, speaking to people and to families, that the social death that is becoming a refugee, that continuous, unending, multi-generational humiliation and social death of becoming a refugee was such a formative part of our Palestinian, modern Palestinian identity, which I think the Israelis never took into account. And so when they came to give people the option of dying or becoming refugee, Palestinians knew in their collective memory that becoming a refugee is a form of death, but it is a crueler and more continuous and unending death than just a biological death. And so as we're watching this, I keep thinking about how, what is the most important resistance we have as Palestinians to genocide? And for me, it is about, it is to talk about tomorrow. We have to talk about tomorrow. We have to plan for tomorrow. We have to ensure that tomorrow happens and that we have plans to rebuild Gaza and to help our people heal their these horrendous wounds. And we have to support in solidarity every aspect of and every part of our people in trying to rebuild their lives and to heal the wounds of this genocide. If genocide is meant to end us, then tomorrow signifies our victory over genocide. But as a lot of the scholars that have spoken and will speak, Israel has always attempted to achieve in a ceasefire what it's always failed to achieve in war. And it's a lot of times Israel has been more successful during the ceasefire than it was during hostility. And so it's critical that we, as we watch this genocidal iceberg disintegrate, so and we watch the genocide accomplices try to bury the evidence of their complicity. We need to ensure that what happens in the ceasefire is not a continuation of the genocide, but in a much more silent and slow way. We need, as Palestinians and as pro-Palestinian forces, we need to look each in our own field on how we rebuild Gaza, how we rebuild the lives of over 70,000 wounded, how do we rebuild the health system, not in abstract terms, but in real terms. In real terms, what do we do with what was left of Al-Ahli Hospital so that we can very quickly build it? What do we do with Laude Hospital in Jabalia so that we can really quickly build it? How do we rebuild Shifa, which was completely demolished? How do we rebuild the schools and the education system while it's being used as a system for the internally displaced because 65 to 70% of the houses have been destroyed? How do we learn from the experience of Turkey in the earthquake to very quickly rebuild, rehouse people in prefabricated homes while the rebuilding happens? And how do we politically come out of this as a people, stronger, more unified? And we take the struggle and we are able to build on the achievements that we paid dearly, our people paid with blood, the blood of their children, the limbs of their children, for, so that this becomes not a only a tragic chapter in the history of our struggle against the elimination of Zionist settler colonialism, but actually a stepping stone towards absolute and total liberation of Palestine. How do we turn Gaza from what it was, which was an area of Palestine that was besieged, to a liberated zone that becomes the focus for our liberation struggle in the phase after this genocide? These things might seem far-fetched at the moment in the sea of blood, in horrendous details of suffering, 17,000 orphaned children, 4,000 to 5,000 children with amputations, 70,000 to 75,000 wounded, of whom probably 80% still need further surgery. Other than the physical destruction, the complete and utter destruction of all universities, the killing of 6,000 students and 300 school teachers and school administrators, over 70 university teachers, deans, and university lecturers and professors. But it is absolutely critical that we think and talk and plan about what we plan to do the day after this genocidal war finally ends, as we watch the accomplices fight amongst each other and prepare to throw probably Netanyahu under the bus as the sin eater for this most horrendous of all crimes. What our people have witnessed and what our people have defeated is a genocidal project that was composed of three machines. And these three killing machines were the bombs and the blasts. And we heard recently that the human intellect was not capable of finding enough targets quickly enough to feed that killing machine. And so they relied on AI to generate targets. And that bomb and blast is either those who were killed outright or who were killed as a result of the fact that concomitant with